Well, I fixed my audio. It turned out to be easier just to sit back at the PC and actually use the proper setup in my office rather than muck around with all the plugs. Now, having said that, when I was in London last week with Scott, we were using the, geez, what was it? The Rode H6. It's sitting down there somewhere. Rode H6. I had the wrong plugs originally. I borrowed some plugs from Stephen Horn. So it worked okay for Scott and I. Great mobile setup, but obviously, if I'm at home and I have access to all the good sort of big microphone, not to mention the lighting and everything. So for the first time in a while, this video actually looks pretty clear. I'm going to use that. Now, having said that, I did get a bunch of advice from people about bits and pieces I needed to make the H6 work. So thank you very much for that. I've ordered a couple of VLX-R Plus adapters from Rode, which effectively have the great big 3-pin VLX plug on one side and the 3.5mm jack on the other side. 3 pins being one of those can supply phantom power to the microphone. In theory, this should work fine. Hopefully it arrives today or Monday, today being Friday, because Tuesday I'm going to go off to Sydney. So Tuesday I'm going to do a whole bunch of things for Microsoft, so I'll talk about those in a moment. I will be recording this remote again on Tuesday, so hopefully I've got the plugs there and I can do it properly. Very nice to be back in Australia and have decent coffee too. And now it's a funny thing. Very often I've said this to people from overseas, and they're like, "What do you mean, like Australian decent coffee? Like, isn't it all just about like beaches and sunshine there?" And yes, that's a very important part of it. But Australia definitely, by far, has the best coffee in the world. Everyone who comes here says this. Honestly, it's a thing. Just trust me. All right, moving on. So yes, I'm obviously home from London, still jet lagged as hell, up at stupid hours every morning, and just doesn't seem to be getting much better. It only sort of takes about a week, and I'm, what am I, 5 days in. So hopefully another couple of days and I'll start to settle down. I mentioned Sydney. So next week is Microsoft Ignite, or I believe it is now Microsoft Ignite the Tour, because it sort of goes to different places. So I've got a number of things coming up in Sydney, and frankly, I'm not sure what they are. I'm going to literally open up my diary. I basically just say yes to stuff if I'm going to be in that location and then let other people put things in my calendar. And some of these are public as well. What have I got? Oh, here we go, Tuesday. So Tuesday, I'm going to do a cloud and InfoSec Q&A with Simon Waite from Microsoft with the Azure User Group there in Sydney. I've done a few of those with him before. That's a freebie. Last time I checked, there were only like a very, very small number of seats left as well. So apologies if they've sold out. They're free. Apologies if there's no seats left. I'm going to put a link to that in the notes here anyway. If you are in Sydney, that'll be cool. Mostly because I haven't prepared anything and I've got no idea what we're going to do. But I sort of said to Simon, like, can we just make it an AMA? Because that way I don't have to prepare any stuff. So yeah, it's going to be mostly AMA. That'll be fun. Wednesday, I've got some Microsoft Envision MVP pre-day stuff. I'm doing some CISO stuff on Wednesday. Thursday, Friday is the Ignite event. So if you're in Sydney and you can get to Ignite, come along there. I appear to be doing a panel discussion, apparently, and some other stuff. And I just work it out from there. And then after that, I'll be back home. And it is my sincere intention to not travel anywhere for quite some time. So we'll see. That's the intention. We'll see how it works out. Now, getting back to other things, business things, cyber things. What I thought I'd do today is I've got a couple of things that I definitely want to talk about that were already on my list. And then I was just sort of having a look at my tweets since last week in London with Scott. And I realized there's a bunch of stuff that at least I thought was really interesting and probably warranted some further discussion. So the cyber things first, Chrome 80 has just hit. Now I've got the little icon sitting up there nagging me to press update. The significance of Chrome 80 is that Chrome 80 does bring the changes to same site cookies with it. So I will link to the blog post that I wrote about this, but in a nutshell, if your cookie was not already flagged as same site, so if it didn't have a same site of either none, lax, or strict, so no same site policy at all, the cookie will be treated as lax. Now, this is really important because that cookie will no longer get sent on a cross-origin post request. There are a couple of other scenarios that will no longer get sent cross-origin. For example, if you put one site in an iframe of another site, then the cookie won't go to the site that's been framed, and it will also not go if it's a request for an image. So this is all important stuff because if you've got no policy whatsoever, it's going to become lax, and there are situations where it won't be sent. Also, Chrome 80 expects that any same site cookie that is lax has a secure attribute on it, which means that it can only be set and sent over HTTPS, which is good because you should have all your things HTTPS anyway. So that's good. And incidentally, if you do go and set a same site policy of none, which effectively tries to revert you back to the old behavior pre-Chrome 80, that breaks in Safari and iOS 12 and on other mobile devices as well. So it's all a bit of a kind of a mess. And I sort of found a tweet here, which I thought was just a really good summary of the sorts of issues people are having. This guy here, Melodious Code, I'll link to it, says, after a bit of anger, followed by tears, followed by sudden realization, I have managed to get past weird behavior in a web application we're deploying. My thanks go to Troy Hunt for writing about same-site cookies recently. And this is the problem, right? Because these changes to same-site cookies, and in fact, it's not even changes to same-site cookies, it's changes to cookies, full stop, and it relates to the way same-site policies are set. These changes are very likely to be the kind of thing that's just an absolute pain in the ass to debug and find the root cause of. Because it'll be, look, I mean, you know what a sort of patchwork quilt websites are these days. All the different things they embed from different locations. Many of them are cross-origin. Some of them have dependencies on each other. One of the things doesn't load because the cookie wasn't sent and the response was different. And you've got to try and figure out what that actual little behavior is. It's going to be a real pain. Now, a little clarification point, and there has been some really interesting discussion on Twitter about this, is that Chrome 80 on launch day, which is yesterday, doesn't introduce the change. The change appears to be coming in a couple of weeks' time, the change to same-site cookies, or a week and a half's time, about 10 days' time from now. And then that will come. So it's not actually on Chrome 80 launch day, it's a little bit later. And I noticed some discussion online between some, let's say, enthusiastic people on Twitter and some folks on the Google Chrome team about the fact that the communication could have been better and it wasn't quite clear and some of the changes to dates were made in a way that wasn't completely transparent to people. So there is a little bit of confusion at the moment. Keep in mind also the changes happening here to Chrome in 80 are also coming to Firefox and they're also coming to Edge. So get used to it. Like, this is the new normal. And don't forget all the user agent sniffing you got to do to try and make the really old stuff work as well. That'll be fun. So that's that. Fun times. I'm so glad I don't have to look after enterprise software anymore, because that's what worries me. You know, like, if you've worked in the enterprise and you've seen some of the crap that gets cobbled together there, that like, let's not even go down that rabbit hole, but that's the sort of stuff that I really see breaking. All right, so that was Chrome 80. Now, a data breach to talk about before I then go through and look at some of the tweets. It's not a subtle way to put this. A little ears in the car, might want to turn off the podcast for a moment. The world's largest sex and swinger site, Adult Friend Finder, they had a data breach. They had two data breaches they had that they know of. There was one data breach in 2015. Now, back in 2015, I remember this actually because it was quite the year for data breaches of sites of that nature, because that was the year that Ashley Madison was breached back in July 2015. It was then the next month that the data appeared all over the place. But going back before that, it was about April from memory in 2015, Adult Friend Finder had a breach that exposed 4 million records of a very, very similar nature to Ashley Madison. And I think the benefit of hindsight, what might have really, really made Ashley Madison hit the headlines in the way it did was this sort of taboo bit about, we have created a site specifically for you to go out and have affairs. And that's what got so much press. And Noel Biderman, the CEO, was sort of a very public identity and almost sort of legitimizing the whole industry. So I think that's what really, really got the attention. Now, remember, Ashley Madison with 30-something million records. Adult Friend Finder Data Breach Version 2 happened in October 2016, and that was some number of hundreds of millions of records. Now, that is a lot of millions. Now, I'm just going to try and find the actual story that I'm linking to here. Actually, at the time of recording, I haven't made this live. It's just sitting there waiting for me to push the button. So by the time this podcast goes out, it will be very live. Where was it? Adult Friend. Oh, I was on. I tell you what, the things in my browser history. ZDNet AFF breach. Now, the reason I'm looking this up is that when this breach happened, the headline here, and I've got to explain because these numbers aren't all going to be consistent. The headline here was Adult Friend Finder Network Hack Exposes 412 Million Accounts. Now, that's the big number. And then we distill it down to the point where we'll eventually get down to 170 million records that I've just loaded. So, what actually happened here is that there were multiple different websites as part of this data breach. Now, this shot to the headlines in 2016 after the now defunct leaked Source website. So this is the website where they would sell anybody, everybody else's data. The whole thing got taken offline a few years ago. And then, of course, WeLeak Info, very similar sort of service, that got taken offline only a few weeks ago. So not so good when you sell everyone else's personal information for gain, apparently. So in this particular case, there are multiple websites involved. So it says here the hack includes 339 million accounts on adultfriendfinder.com, which the company describes as the world's largest sex and swinger community. That also included over 15 million, quoted, deleted accounts that wasn't purged from the databases. We'll come back to that because that's a fascinating thing. On top of that, 62 million accounts from cams.com, 7 million from penthouse.com were stolen, as well as a few million from other smaller properties owned by the company. So the headline comprises of multiple different data breaches, of which the Adult Friend Finder website was the largest. Now, the thing is that this obviously happened some time ago. So this is now 3.5 years ago the incident happened. And the data has only just popped up in my inbox. I mean, that's just the way it happens. Often there can be really, really major incidents and the data's out there and it's in closed circles and eventually it distributes far enough that someone sends it to me. Sometimes it works the other way around. Someone sends me the data and it doesn't appear anywhere else. That's just the nature of the way information flows. When it was sent to me and I started doing some research, in fact, I'm going to bring the other laptop over here because it's got my work in progress because I started processing all of this while I was away. And in fact, it has been an absolute pain in the ass to get the right data out as best I can. And you'll see why in a moment. That's why it's on the mobile laptop, because I've been doing this since I was in London. Now, there are a few interesting things here. One of the interesting things was that I was trying to figure out why the data I got sent had a headline in the email of the person who sent it to me of 240 million records. And it turns out that the 240 million records is information that, or is a number that the website I just mentioned, the now defunct WeLeak Info, had. And if I go through and I have a look at all this is in Web Archive, I've got leaked source here, opened up on Web Archive or web.archive.org, because of course the site is dead, looking at what they originally wrote about it. And then of course, because WeLeak Info is also dead, I've got that one up in the archive.org website as well. Now, what these guys have said, and we know it was guys, it was a guy in the Netherlands and a guy in Ireland, both somewhat arrested and very quiet now. Other story, I've already discussed that in a previous update. In this particular case, they talk about 240 million records. Now, what they're saying here is, supposedly, the version we were given is the final parsed version that was imported into leaked source back in 2016. The final record count for our version is 240,000,230. The missing 99 million records are believed to be bot accounts that were taken out by leaked source when they parsed the database back in 2016. So that original headline from ZDNet, I'm back in Australia, ZDNet, which was 412 million accounts, filters down to leaked source found 300 million something, filters down to 240 million, which WeLeak Info is talking about. All of this data is sitting in a total of 29.3 gigabytes worth of 11 different .sql files to restore into a MySQL database. I went through more due diligence than what I normally would just to try and figure out why the numbers didn't match up. So I restored them into a MySQL database. I found exactly 220 million rows, 220 million on the nose, exactly precisely, which I think is a little bit odd. It's within 10% roughly of the number that WeLeak Info reported here. But then once I actually took a distinct count of all those, that's when the numbers started to change and get even less. So I wrote about them here. The distinct So 220 million exactly records in the data I was sent. The distinct records were 199 million. But then there's the point about the air quotes deleted, which was mentioned just before. And the what this is so shady. I mean, big shock, right? Like, the world's largest sex and swinger site turned out to do some shady stuff. What they appear to have done is when an account has been deleted, they change the email address by adding an @deleted1.com at the end of it. So you'd have like john@gmail.com @deleted1.com. So once you actually replace those @deleted out and you take them out of it, the 199 million came down to 169 million. Actually, rounds to 170 million. It's like 169,746,000. So call it 170 million. So that is why the number being reported in Have I Been Phoned is 170 million, whereas the headline here in ZDNet is 412 million. Make sense? So anyway, that's going out. I'll push the button on that after I finish doing this this weekly update. So fascinating stuff in terms of data breach land. And that's also why I haven't loaded many data breaches in the last week and a bit, because it's taken a lot of time just to try and get to the bottom of that. Incidentally, these things are never quite, well, sometimes they're perfect, often not quite perfect when there's large amounts of data that have been passed between different people. And I have to sort of get to the point where it's like, am I confident enough this is legitimate and accurate enough? Is it like 99% there? And if it's 99% there and there's like the 1% that's missing, okay. And this does appear to be at that 99% mark. It's not the 100%, it's good enough. All right. On to some tweet stuff, because there was a bunch of interesting things when I was just spinning back through this that I thought happened, or a bunch of things I thought was interesting, over the last week. A number of things here. NEC had a data breach in 2016. Turns out they took a long time to talk about it. That wasn't so good. Scott and I mentioned the other day, actually, when we were in London, about SSL Labs starting to cap grades to B if the server still supports TLS 1.0 or 1.1. And, of course, remember also the browsers are going to start... the browsers... What does Scott say? I think Chrome at some near point in the future, if the TLS version is not 1.2 or higher, or if the site doesn't support 1.2 or higher, we're going to start getting big warnings. So obviously the writing on the wall from everyone here is 1.0, 1.1 is on the way out. Incidentally, last week I think I said in this update, I'm not sure if on Cloudflare you can just configure the TLS version. You can, and I've actually had it on 1.2 and above on Have I Been Pwned for quite some time anyway. And as far as I know, no one's said they've had problems with that. Some people probably have, but it's going to be a fraction of a percent. Another interesting thing here, this... Boy, oh boy, this caused some arguments. So the EU Parliament has voted for all tech companies to use the same charger, which is effectively USB-C. Now, I feel reasonably happy about that, because I'm looking at all the cables that I've got in my desk here. There's a lightning one just there. Here over here, what's that? That's it's a micro USB. So the lightning is for the iPhone, and then there's a micro USB here, which is charging a Lenovo tablet that I just haven't fired up for a while. There's a USB-C here, which is charging the iPad. There's like three different plugs right here just for my three mobile devices. And I didn't set this up either. I literally just looked around me after I read that headline and went, geez, I've got a lot of plugs that are all different here. I think this is a positive thing, and inevitably USB-C is going to be the format moving forward. I think that's positive in many ways. I'm very happy not to be using a lightning cable anymore in the future. Some people, who frankly I think just like arguing on Twitter, apparently that is a big thing on Twitter, were sort of like, that's not good. Consumers should be able to choose. It's like, no, like not in this area. Do you think anyone goes into the shop and goes, well, I'd really like an Android device that takes a lightning cable, you know, or I really would like an iPhone that can do micro USB or something like that. No. Consumers want to plug the damn thing in and have it charge and have it to connect to the devices they need to. And we do still need to connect into a physical charging unit as well. It charges a lot faster than what you'd get with wireless charging. I love wireless charging. I've got another unit here with yet another plug on for wireless charging for my phone. It's great, but it's not the same as being able to charge over a cable. And of course, there are other peripherals and things like that we often need to plug into these. I appear to have lost my iPad Airs the other day. iPad Airs. What are they? iPod Airs, which on the one hand is very annoying because it's just hard having phone calls. On the other hand, is obviously a sign I need a set of Pod Air Pros. Told you I'm jet lagged, didn't I? Anyway, regardless, it is happening. We're moving forward on that. Here's an interesting one. People are still getting, speaking of Ashley Madison and adult websites, people are still getting blackmail attempts due to their presence on Ashley Madison. Isn't that amazing? 4.5 years on, still getting blackmail attempts. So this person here says, sound familiar, right, Troy Hunt? Dear Ashley Madison user, I know everything about you, pay up or else. And there's an Ars Technica article about it. I'm not going to link to all these either. They're just in my tweet history from during the week. So that was an interesting thing. What else was in here that was good? Litigation stuff. Oh, eBay appears to have got their Twitter account either popped or they authed it to some other app and someone got access to the other app. But there was a little bit there where Our Mine, a group who seems to have been very good at doing this in the past, managed to go and tweet via their account. They said in the tweet, "We are here to show people that everything is hackable." Like, okay, that's a fair point under the circumstances. "To improve your account security, contact us. Contact at ourmine.org. For security services, visit ourmine.org." Do you reckon anyone sees this, sees them take over a Twitter account, and then goes, "I reckon we should get these guys in. You know, like, I reckon we should trust them with our security things." It's, I don't know. Maybe some people do. Be interesting. If you've used Our Mine services after seeing them pop other accounts, let me know. I'm curious now. So that's interesting. Here's another interesting one too. There was a password manager, Dashlane, in a Super Bowl commercial. Now, this would have cost an absolute bomb for them to do. Obviously, any sort of Super Bowl commercials are absolutely massive. And I just think it's a really interesting sign of the times to see a password manager and even just the concept of a password manager blasted out to the masses in a super, super expensive advertisement. And I think that's a really, really positive thing. I don't care which password manager it is. I just like the idea that it's out there in front of people and getting the idea of creating secure passwords into the psyche of football fans. And, you know, inevitably that is a lot of people. So that's interesting. What else in here? Oh, boy. Microsoft forgets to renew certificate. Teams goes offline. It's not the first time for Microsoft either. It's a joyful thing about being independent, having Microsoft titles but not really any accountability. Not like a permanent employee or something. I can talk about this. And, you know, I guess in fairness to Microsoft, loads of companies have forgotten to renew certificates. And the point that I was making here, I quote tweeted this, I said, adding this to the list of references for next time a commercial CA talks smack about automated cert renewal. Certificate renewal is important. It happens on a regular cadence. Now, whether that regular cadence is a 2-year cadence or a 3-month cadence, it is regular and it's repeatable. This is something that should be automatable and also something that is monitored for when certificates are obviously approaching renewal time. So this to me is a ringing endorsement of not just Let's Encrypt, but bypassing Norway or whoever you want to use and using an Acme protocol and having the whole thing automated and monitored. I mean, this is what we want. Stop manually renewing stuff. Now, with that said, certificates for something like Microsoft Teams may well be a very different kettle of fish in many ways to renewing the certificate automatically on haveibeenpwned.com or something like that. So it might be more complex than what it looks on the surface, but it is a really good reminder of what happens when you don't renew a certificate. Like, stuff just breaks. So there was that. Other things that are coming up. What else is coming up here? Oh, I got a whole heap more Scott Helm stickers. People are very happy with the Scott Helm stickers. And rather than say it out loud, just in case we have little ears in the car, I'll show you what a Scott Helm sticker looks like. Because I do still have a great big stash of these, which is sitting on my shelf. But I ordered more, because every time I travel, people are very excited to get themselves a Scott Helm sticker. So if you see me at an event and you want a Scott Helm sticker, I will give you one on the proviso that you stick it somewhere interesting, take a photo and share it with Scott. Don't stick it on the Great Barrier Reef. Long story, just don't do that. So that was their Toll Group. Toll Group tight-lipped on alleged ransomware attack. So Toll, which has a whole bunch of logistics stuff here in Australia, I'm not sure if they're in other areas as well, not so good for them. That's not worked out so well. Someone here has had a tweet which a bunch of people have pointed me out, and I thought this one was really interesting. There's a guy here, John Oberhide, tweeted a few days ago. Now, this has got over 5,000 likes, 2,500 retweets. He says, whoa, what? Google Photos? Google has sent out a message saying, we are writing to inform you of a technical issue that affected the Google Download Your Data service for Google Photos between November 21, 2019 and November 25, 2019, when it was fixed. Now, it says, between those dates, our records show you requested a Google Download Your Data export, which included Google Photos content. Okay, fine. Second point, however, is, unfortunately, during this time, some videos in Google Photos were incorrectly exported to unrelated users' archives. One or more videos in your Google Photos account was affected by this issue. So, hang on a second. If you had photos or videos in your Google Photos archive, someone else may have seen it. That is really worrying. The message is just not good as well, because it goes on and says, if you downloaded your data, it may be incomplete and it may contain videos that are not yours. The underlying issue has been identified and resolved. We recommend you perform another export of your content and delete your prior export at this time. And then it's like, we apologize for any inconvenience this may have caused. I think, Google, you're kind of missing the point of what people are upset about. You know, people are not upset about, oh, when I did the export, I actually didn't have one of my videos in there. They're upset about the fact that one of their videos, and people do take videos of a lot of personal things, may have ended up in someone else's export. And what's really worrying about this is that there's no indication on here of which of your videos might have ended up in someone else's export, nor who got to see it. So imagine people with really personal things, and I don't just mean like dick videos or something like that. What if it was a really personal video of your kids, or you know, a nice message you sent your partner or something like that? And then you're going, I wonder if someone else has seen this. I wonder if someone else now has this and might replicate it or might use it in a way that I never expected. And that is just horrifying. And I'll tell you what, more than anything, this to me was a reminder that every time you digitize something, you take on risk. Now, I actually wrote something years ago that some people got upset about. It's the internet. And it was in response to, there was a story here about someone picked up, I think they picked up a teacher's phone. The kid picked up teacher's phone. Teacher's phone had some intimate pictures or videos on it that the teacher then got fired as a result of that, which of course is just an absolutely ridiculous thing to happen. But I was sort of making the point that there's always a risk when you digitize something of unintended exposure. Now, people got upset because they said, oh, you're victim blaming. You should be able to take photos and videos of whatever you want. And they're right, you should. When you do that, you take on a risk that you would not have if you didn't do that. And you've got to decide whether you want to take that risk. So for me, when I sort of see stuff like this, it's a reminder that I enjoy taking photos of the kids and them doing stuff that's fun. I would be really conscious that any photo or video I took might be something that might one day be public for many, many different reasons. One of them being because you might have put it in your Google Photos. So I think that is just a personal sort of risk assessment that you need to do and consider how much stuff you actually want to digitize. So, sign of the times. Now, what else was in here? There was something else. No, there was something else in here. I got an email from someone. I get the weirdest emails. It feels like, yeah, I reckon I could say pretty much every day. I get up and I get an email from someone, which is just bizarre. So here's this one. I just found an internet article saying you are a internet security expert. Can you tell me how I can remove myself from the internet at no charge? No, I can't. And for everyone that then chimed in on this and said, oh, GDPR, just make a subject access request and then a right to erasure and everything, that doesn't work with data breaches. And as we just saw, even with the whole adult friend finder thing, deletion isn't necessarily deletion either. So no, there is no way to remove yourself from the internet. And every company charging money to do it is going to take some stuff out, but not everything out. There's just no way it works. And regulations and legislation and even promises that it's been done just don't work. So remember, the whole Ashley Madison data breach happened in the first place. One of the reasons it happened is because someone was very upset when they discovered that their Ashley Madison's, I'm air quoting here for people listening, full delete service would zero out the personally identifiable data on the membership record, but then there'd be a payment record because you had to pay to have your data deleted, which would then reference back to the original record and it would have information about the owner. So deleting isn't even deleting, not all the time. And then even if it is deleted, does it get deleted out of all the backups? And for everyone, again, jumping up and down under whatever regulation you choose, saying, yes, but I have the right to erasure. Yeah, but when you've got incremental backups over many years and there's one row and a backup in a tape in an offsite location in cold storage, that record's still going to sit in there until it gets rotated out. So, yeah, deleting off the internet, not quite so simple. So, so there's that. This is good. The German Federal Information Security Agency is no longer recommending regularly rotating your passwords. That aligns them with the NIST guidance of recent years, and I believe the NCSC has also made similar guidance. Good news, because we know that when people rotate their password, all they do is they increment the number at the end. It really doesn't work. It hasn't worked for a long time. So there's that, and I think that that almost brings us up to speed. I remember what the last thing is I wanted to talk about now. So, Philips Hue light bulbs. It's a story here. Flaw in Philips smart light bulbs exposes your Wi-Fi network to hackers. And I have literally just finished doing the NDC talks in NDC Security in Oslo and then NDC London about the Internet of Pwned Things, where I showed smart light bulbs which have had vulnerabilities in the past. So the LIFX light bulbs would actually store the Wi-Fi credentials for the network in plain text. People would chuck them out. You could dumpster dive and then get the password for the network. And as part of that talk, I show my Ubiquiti network at home where I have VLAN'd off all the IoT stuff. So I shared this yesterday, and then I just went through and had a quick look at my network. And there are a couple of critical things here. And in fact, a lot of people want me to write about this, so I think I should try and consolidate this into a post. The first critical thing is that LIFX have patched the flaw. When I went through and looked at my Philips Hue app, I noted that automatic updates are enabled. Everything was patched. It is running the patched version. So IoT really needs to be able to auto-update itself, and it really needs to self-repair, and it needs to be enabled if it's not enabled by default. So check, I'm good there. And then the other thing is that my Philips Hue bridge is actually on the IoT network at home. So look, bugger it, I will write this up at some point. I have a dedicated logical network at home just for IoT. I then also have a logical wireless network which uses that network called, I call my networks at home HTTP 403, forbidden because why not? And I have one called HTTP 403 IoT. And everything from the washing machine, yes, that's right, through to things like the Amazon Echo is on there as well. So all that sort of stuff just sits on that network. That network cannot see into the home network. If someone gets in there, short of being able to break out of the VLAN in Ubiquiti's configuration, all they're going to be able to do is mess with my washing machine or my irrigation system out there. So being able to VLAN stuff's really important. Now, the Philips Hue bridge is not Wi-Fi, it is wired. So when I set this all up, I had to make sure that the actual port on the switch was mapped to a separate network. So in fact, I've got the Philips Hue bridge on there. I've also got some Netgear Arlo security cameras outside. And literally the physical port that they plug into maps onto the IoT network, keeps them separate from everything else, which is great. Now, it's as a couple of people said, they're like, how are our mums and dads meant to do this? I was like, well, there's an easy answer. They're not. You know, that is a painful thing for your average user to do. But for your prosumer user, like many people listening to this, super easy to do with Ubiquiti and the Unify system, which I've written about extensively before. One of the things, in fact, I can see the box sitting up there. One of the things I'm going to do shortly is set up a Ubiquiti Unify dream machine for a family member in a new house. And that is super epic. Same sort of thing, has all the really good bits of the full-blown Ubiquiti network that I've written about before, except it's packaged into one nice little sexy-looking unit. So VLAN your IoT things. And that brings us up to speed. So that's the first one I've done at home for quite some time. And I hope that the audio and the video have been better than what you have seen for a very, very long time. And then the last thing it leaves us with is a new sponsor this week. So it's Duo Security. So thank you, Duo Security. You're going to see a bit of them for a while. Modern security is evolving beyond the perimeter. Download 5 steps to perimeterless security and secure your application access. And certainly as a principle, this whole idea of where the perimeter is something that has really changed fundamentally in recent years. And regardless of the Duo sponsorship, I've spoken about this a lot lately. And I'll sort of say to people, remember what it was like in the enterprise back in the day when it's like, there's a firewall and everyone comes into the firewall and you are behind the perimeter and everything behind the perimeter is good and everything outside the perimeter is considered bad. And then we started bringing these things, the mobile devices, and then we started bringing, well, before that, started bringing USB sticks and plugging stuff in. And then everything kind of went to the cloud and we started sending stuff back out. And the whole idea of just having this sort of perimeter, which is a security barrier that the good stuff stays behind and the bad stuff stays out, that whole principle is gone. So go and check out Duo's piece here. And a big thanks to them for sponsoring me. And you're going to see a lot more of them in the future. And incidentally, I have gotten way behind in actually organizing sponsors as well. So if you are a sponsor interested in sponsoring TroyHunt.com, there's a sponsor link up on the top of the blog post or the entire blog. Check that out and then go to the contact link and send me an email and we'll try and see what we can sort out. Thank you very much for watching this one. I really hope that this audio and video has been unprecedented for some time. We'll see how it looks next week when I'm mobile again. See you later.